Countries and companies are pressing ahead with their net zero targets. And with this, there's going to be a huge increase in demand for green technologies. But green technologies will require the mining of significantly more minerals than we are mining today. So do we have enough minerals for this cleaner energy revolution? And how can we get them out of the ground without massive negative impacts on the environment and biodiversity?
A renewables future will be massively mineral intensive. You have to think of things like copper for networks and wiring. You have to think of lithium, nickel, cobalt for batteries. You have to think of aluminium for electric vehicles. So mining will definitely need to intensify.
Welcome to the Sustainability Podcast. I'm your host, James Gifford, Head of Sustainable and Impact Advisory at Credit Suisse. And we just heard from Dirk Huizemans, a portfolio manager at Credit Suisse in the energy transition space. Now, Jens Zimmermann is an equity research analyst at Credit Suisse. Jens, can you walk us through what increases in green technologies are going to be needed to meet net zero targets?
The IEA is forecasting that 76% of all the power generation by 2050 will have to come from wind and solar compared to 10% now. And this means we have a huge increase or build out in capacity for wind and solar. And for that, we need these materials.
The forecast from the International Energy Agency shows a big jump in wind and solar. What kind of financial investment is needed to make that happen?
The IEA is forecasting $30 trillion in spending over the next 28 years until 2050 just for the build-out of wind and solar capacity to reach the climate targets.
That's $30 trillion just for wind and solar investments. But energy transition isn't just about wind and solar, right? What are the other technologies needed and how much investment will be required?
I mean, wind and solar farms are important. That's the basis for the energy transition, but there are also the other areas connected to it. If you look at the transportation sector, the housing sector, that also need to decarbonize with much more electricity use and need to be electrified. And then, of course, the whole grid system, the power grid all needs to get much smarter as well. For the other technologies, you also need around about $20 trillion. So those are big numbers.
The International Energy Agency has also projected the volume of metals and minerals needed for a renewable future. What sort of scale are we looking at?
Up until 2040, lithium for the sustainable development scenario, which means to stay below 2 degrees Celsius by the end of the century, would have to grow 42 times compared to the level in 2020. Graphite 25 times, cobalt 21 times, and nickel almost 20, as a 19 times. So, I mean, those just gives you an idea about the scale we're looking at here over the next 20 years, what needs to happen in order to make this energy transition happen.
Using an everyday example to illustrate this, a typical electric vehicle requires 6 times the mineral inputs compared to a combustion engine car. And an onshore wind farm requires 9 times the minerals inputs of a gas-fired thermal power plant. So Jens, do we have enough of these minerals to make this happen?
This is kind of the same discussion we always had on the oil and gas side. 20 years ago, there was this peak oil thesis that there wasn't enough oil around until they found shale. Now it's moved, peak oil is on the demand side, the big issue. But so, to apply this to the metals and materials sector, it doesn't seem to be an issue that it's not in the ground. It's just a question of having the political will and the right price to get it out of the ground.
Dr. Laura Sonter is an author and a fellow at the University of Queensland. One of Laura's published studies says that the mining necessary for producing renewable energy could exacerbate threats to biodiversity. So what areas of the world are most at risk?
Our study was a global analysis, and we showed that about 82% of the world's areas were potentially influenced by mining to produce these materials that we need for renewable energy production. The specific materials that we're going to mine and their consequences for species will differ from place to place, but the areas that were currently mined to produce fossil fuels were different from the areas that we're going to need to increasingly mine to produce the materials that we need for renewable energy in the future. But I think one of the good news stories about our study was that quite a lot of the materials that we need occur outside of protected areas and places important for conservation. And so there's a good chance that we can produce a lot of what we need in a strategic way that avoids the places that are most vulnerable and most susceptible to mining.
And what about arid areas? Is it always better to mine from a biodiversity perspective in arid areas where you're not knocking down rainforests, for example?
So lithium is really important for energy storage and batteries. The world's largest resources are in the salt pans in Bolivia and Argentina and Chile. These are very arid environments where access to water is key for local communities and maintaining their livelihoods. It's also really important for local flora and fauna. But we know that producing lithium in these environments uses and extracts a lot of that water resource. So that can cause huge environmental problems, but also water-related conflicts with these different groups of people that live in these areas. So for some materials, some minerals, some metals will be less about sort of the habitat loss or the deforestation that we focused on in this study, and more about how the extraction of those minerals influences other parts of the environment.
Stefan Pfister is a professor. Stefan, what's your take on the impacts of mining for these critical minerals?
I'm a professor at ETH Zurich at the Institute of Environmental Engineering, and I was also managing the project called Swiss Minerals Observatory, where we looked into mining at an interdisciplinary perspective. I think sometimes this debate is a bit guided towards criticizing the material demand or metal demand for the renewables, which is a challenge. And I think it's mainly also a challenge in terms of investment, developing mine areas and keeping up with the speed. But from a purely environmental perspective, I think it's way less than we have currently caused by coal mine. It's obviously a trade-off, but it's not that we just add on mining impacts, but by mining for these metals, we can reduce mining for coal, and then the net impact on the mining might be much lower than if we just add this to the current extent.
If we look at intensifying production in renewable energy systems and minerals, some of those need coal in the process. So aluminium smelting or copper smelting, nickel mainly comes from Indonesia, where it's processed using coal-fired power. So it almost feels like a necessary evil.
That's a great point, Dirk. And it may be news to some of our listeners that coal is still needed and used in some clean energy processes. So, Stefan, has your research given any specific numbers on the impacts of coal mining required within a renewable energy future?
Coal mining is 1/3 or 25% of the impacts of the wind energy or biomass energy or thermal energy. So there's a lot of coal, as you say, in the processing. Definitely coal-based economies in the metal production sector is adding a lot to the greenhouse gas emissions and adding also to the mining-related impacts.
Let's look at mining of some specific critical minerals in particular. We'll require huge additional amounts of copper for transmission lines, for batteries, for the coils and generators in wind turbines. Would this additional supply need to come from new mines?
If there's an additional demand, price goes up, existing mines might just start extracting copper from the low-value rock part that was considered waste rock before, but they reprocess. They might also reprocess tailings if the price is high enough. To open a new mine, it's a political process. It usually takes 10 years or more to get from finding an ore to actually selling some products. So usually these time horizons are very long.
So waste rock can often be used instead of opening a new mine. Now, lithium demand, used for batteries, is likely to see the sharpest increase of all critical minerals, rising almost 20-fold between 2021 and 2030, according to the International Energy Agency. So what part can recycling play here?
Lithium is either mined from rock, which is predominantly happening in Australia, or it's evaporated in these brine salt ponds in Latin America. But also there, the biodiversity impact is of course not negligible. It's tailings ponds, it's displacing rock. The good thing is recycling will play a big part in getting supply to us, increasingly so. The first batteries that went into electric vehicles were probably not designed to be recycled, but increasingly companies are focusing on circularity and designing recyclability into their product. So that could be an additional source of supply.
The problem is if we expect a 20 times increase, even if we do 100% recycling, we can't provide all of it because the demand is surpassing the waste. So definitely there is a large role to play for recycling, especially for these more traditional metals. For lithium, there is a problem of the purity, what you get. So if you do the recycling and then you have changes in the composition of these batteries, so what has been produced 5 or 10 years ago might not anymore be what is needed right now. There's also changes in the chemistry. So I think for these more specialty metals, it's more difficult, but definitely it's part of the solution because in 20 years, when we have maybe plateaued at some level, we will also be able to use much more of these recycled materials.
There are actually also positive examples of for instance, aluminium, where recycled aluminium is less CO2 intensive, is cheaper to produce, and also gets a premium because car manufacturers actually want to demonstrate that they are also decarbonizing their value chain. So those are really positive signals for the recycling industry. And obviously at higher commodity prices, it becomes a weighing effect. Do we mine more or do we recycle more?
As we've heard, it can be very difficult to recycle some of these materials, and some may argue that the energy intensity of recycling means that actually you're better off mining more rather than recycling. Jens?
I think right now it's still very marginal. It needs to be also a lot of investment, a lot of improvements on the technological side. You need to be more energy efficient in terms of not spending so much electricity and energy to even for the recycling process itself. I think on the steel side, there's steel scrapping that's already happening. But if you look at copper, for example, the copper recycling, I think it's negligible right now.
Laura, what do you think about that?
I mean, these minerals, if they're not a renewable resource themselves, eventually the pressure for recycling will outweigh the costs of opening up a new mine to extract them. So I think that the rates at which we will need to open new mines specifically for the purpose of building new renewable energy infrastructure will eventually slow. But we also need to think about the sort of mining legacies that will create and what strategies we have to manage them.
What about rehabilitation? Surely we can restore biodiversity on these mining areas after the mine is closed?
We're really bad at mitigating the biodiversity impacts of mines. A lot of the time we assume that we can reverse or overcome those sort of threats or potential losses to biodiversity through mine site rehabilitation. But I think about 1 or 2% of the world's mines have actually ever been closed properly. We're not very good at closing mines. We kind of just walk away from them. So that's a problem. And then when we do try to close a mine down, rarely does it send the site back to its pre-existing state or a state that's sort of valuable for biodiversity, we typically transition it to another land use that's important for surrounding communities, like, you know, cattle grazing, for example. And then the third thing is that when we don't close down a site and rehabilitate it properly, it continues to generate threats to biodiversity over time, some of which become increasingly problematic the older that abandoned mine site becomes. They produce sort of really toxic waste, and that continues to pollute local waterways, for example.
We've looked at copper for electricity and lithium for batteries. Stefan, what about nickel? It's also used for batteries, and it's an example of a mineral that has really big relative impacts on biodiversity.
So nickel is a small share of the mined area. I mean, relatively small, a few percentage, but in terms of biodiversity impacts, it's 10 to 20%. So it's showcasing that mining also has a problem if the ores are situated in biodiversity hotspot regions.
We know that about a fifth of the world's nickel resource is currently located in Indonesia, where mining is going to require enormous amounts of tropical deforestation, which is a leading cause of biodiversity loss and also contributes to global carbon emissions. So it's these interesting dynamics that we need to get a better handle on and make sure that the decisions that we're making about where to source these materials from make sense in the global scheme of things.
But I think we have to distinguish a little bit. I mean, on the extraction side, there's nothing you can do. I mean, you either have it in the ground or you don't. But on the processing side, and I think that's where the policy side can really try to make a difference.
Leaning into that point, Jens, it's interesting to note that the production of the most critical minerals for the energy transition is more geographically concentrated than the supply of oil. In fact, the top three producers of lithium, cobalt, and rare earth elements control a massive 3/4 of global output.
China is over 60% of batteries, over 80% of solar cells, over 60% of rare earth metals come from China. So what are the EU and the US looking at is domiciling some of those value chains. So the US has installed the Inflation Reduction Act. It wants to attract a lot of investment into clean tech, into battery production and onshoring that value chain. That doesn't happen overnight. So I think in the short to medium term, we will still be dependent on Chinese rare earth metals, Chinese lithium, Chinese batteries.
Stefan, the impacts of mining are felt globally, but what about the local impacts on communities?
I think there's a lot of resistance in developed economies to kind of allow this mining. And as long as it's possible to source it from whatever country at a cheaper price, I think the willingness to pay or also to suffer or accept having the mine next to where we live is limited.
An obvious question seems to be, why not nuclear instead of renewables? A relatively small amount of uranium can produce a huge amount of energy. So, Stefan, the uranium mining related impacts overall are surely less.
Overall, our analysis showed that nuclear is not better in terms of metal related impacts per kilowatt hour of electricity produced. But it might be puzzles. The difference is basically that you can provide a base load, which traditionally you could with coal and gas, so it might still play a role in the future energy system.
Dirk, do you think there's a place for nuclear in the future energy mix?
Yeah, of course, nuclear is the lowest carbon source of electricity. It's a stable baseload source of electricity. But I think once we start introducing carbon pricing mechanisms worldwide, nuclear is the clear winner. And I don't think any path to net zero can avoid investing in nuclear and actually can avoid investing in new nuclear. The only issue with nuclear is the waste. We don't have a proper solution for nuclear waste yet. In due course, nuclear fusion will hopefully solve that problem.
And if you look at it from a, again, from a minerals perspective, not uranium, but simply the minerals that needs to go into the construction of these nuclear plants, if you compare offshore wind to nuclear, offshore wind is 3 times more material intensive than a nuclear power plant.
So the construction of wind farms, particularly offshore wind farms, is really minerals intensive and they will need to be replaced regularly. What about the lifespan of nuclear versus renewables?
Typically, the lifespan of a solar plant is around 20 years. And what you would want to do with a wind farm is repower it, i.e. increase the size of the blades after 25 years. A nuclear plant basically can operate quite a long time. They've been designed for 40 years, but you're already seeing the industry extend lifetimes of nuclear plants. And then you have cheap resource electricity at zero capital cost.
It's clear that renewables are an important part of the path to net zero, but they do come with an environmental cost in terms of the minerals required. Therefore, other innovations are required to keep that cost as low as possible. Thanks for listening today. Next month, Plastics will be talking about the challenges and opportunities in the transition to net zero waste. So hit that follow button on Apple or Spotify and check in with us every month. That's the Sustainability Podcast by Credit Suisse.
The information provided herein constitutes general marketing material. It is not investment advice, nor otherwise based on a consideration of the personal circumstances of the addressee, nor is it a result of objective or independent research. The information provided herein is not legally binding, and it does not constitute an offer or invitation to enter into any type of financial transaction. The information provided herein was produced by a member of Credit Suisse Group AG and or its affiliates, hereafter CS, with the greatest of care and to the best of its knowledge and belief. The information and views expressed herein are those of CS at the time of writing and are subject to change at any time without notice. They are derived from sources believed to be truthful and reliable. CS provides no guarantee with regard to the completeness and accuracy of the information, and where legally possible, does not accept liability for any direct, indirect, incidental, specific, or consequential losses that might arise from making use of the information. If nothing is indicated to the contrary, all figures are unaudited. The information provided herein is solely for information purposes and the exclusive use of the recipient, and is not intended and should not be construed as legal, accounting, tax, nor financial advice provided by CS. If this material is issued and distributed in the US, it is by CSSU, a member of NYSE, FINRA, SIPC, and the NFA, and CSSU accepts responsibility for its contents. Clients should contact their sales representative and execute transactions through a Credit Suisse subsidiary or affiliate in their home jurisdiction, unless governing law permits otherwise. This material is intended for institutional investors only, not for retail distribution. It may not be reproduced, neither in part nor in full, without the prior written permission of CS. Important information for investors in Germany. The information and views expressed herein are those of CS at the time of writing and are subject to change at any time without notice. They are derived from sources believed to be reliable. CS provides no guarantee with regard to the content and completeness of the information. If nothing is indicated to the contrary, all figures are unaudited. The information provided herein is for the exclusive use of the recipient. Copyright 2021 Credit Suisse Group AG and or its affiliates. All rights reserved.